Hello, everybody. I think we're just about ready. I think we can move on. I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Archives, and I know we're running late, so I'm sure we can squeeze me in and be done by 5 o'clock. What I wanted to sort of cover is, the great work that the archive staff and myself have been doing, along with many partners and stakeholders in the venture to preserve and make accessible the recordings and the legacy of Pacifica Radio Archives. Pacifica is proud to announce its first print publication from City Lights Books, Redefining Black Power, Reflections on the State of Black America, edited by Joanne Griffith, brings the Pacifica Radio Network and the archives to a reading audience. The book, available February 2012, actually we were hoping the books would arrive last night to give to you, didn't arrive, they'll be arriving Monday or Tuesday, has received positive reviews and a book promotional tour is scheduled for Los Angeles, San Francisco, Berkeley, Washington, D.C., New York City, and Madison, Wisconsin, co-sponsored by affiliate station WRRT. The book and an exclusive CD from the archives will be offered to the Pacifica and affiliate stations as premium gifts for fundraising purposes. And we'll play a little bit more about that or show you more about that in a few minutes. But I wanted to get through some of the major accomplishments the archives has managed to get through in this past year. And also, this is the first year that I haven't been to every single board meeting and in every city. So it's been about a year since I've presented to you face-to-face. So I appreciate the time that you've given me. In addition to the book, the archives has accomplished the following since the last board report in September of 2011. We hosted a two-day national simulcast fund drive November 16th and 17th, receiving $150,000 in pledges for the campus campaign, which takes our collection to libraries and university institutions across the nation. We met our goal to deliver the donor premium gift before the December 25th holiday, bringing it around about a 3.5 to 4 week turnaround time from order pledge to delivery of premium. And I'd like to thank Edgar Toledo and his volunteers in the archives for being able to really put that through. Yes, thank you. Yay, Edgar.
They work very hard.
They do. We completed a grant application for $173,000 to the National Historical Publications and Records Administration of the National Archives and Records. Wait. National Historical Publications and Records Commission of the National Archives and Records Administration. Whoosh. It focused on the second wave of feminism, 1963 to 1982, and I'll read you more about that project, too, if time permits. We completed a collaborative grant application, which is over $400,000, with State University of New York, Albany, and others to the Institute of Museum and Library Sciences. We're actually working on that today and tomorrow to get that application in. But that sort of partners us with the Kitchen Sisters, StoryCorps, University of Kentucky, and many other institutions that have public media that needs to be inventoried and archived. We began the hiring process for the archivist positions that are in the budget, and we met our benchmarks in the Preservation and Access Grant project funded in part by the National Endowment for the Arts this year. I and Mark Torres continue producing and distributing the weekly series From the Vault. Now in its seventh year with 298 programs played regularly on approximately 16 affiliate stations and many more depending on the subject of the program. Sometimes we have as many as 50 affiliate programs broadcasting our programs. KPFT broadcasts From the Vault weekly and KPFK is working to secure a regular schedule after the winter fund drive. Oh, so that's sort of the overall what we managed to do since in the past quarter or so. And now I wanted to sort of show you, well, I guess we can stop for a minute just to take a peek. If there's anything that sort of pops out in your mind that you want to focus on or hear more about, we can do that.
Comments, questions?
Okay, good. Oh, yes. Hey, Campbell.
Questions already?
No, yeah, well, just sort of just checking in with everybody before I move on to something else.
Will the report be online or accessible by email?
Yes, actually it was sent to the chair to be sent to you digitally on Friday or Monday.
Then
it will be as part of the board pack posted on the Pacifica.org website.
And I will distribute anything that Brian sent me.
Okay.
Brian, and if I may, just because of time constraints, you may want to make the entirety of your presentation and then take Q&A, else we might not get through it.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Okay.
We did get it yesterday. It's printed, folks. It's in your package. I knew it was here.
Okay, so back to the idea of the book. I think it's important for me to, again, thank the board of directors who approved the contract to partner with City Lights Books on our first publication of Pacifica as a full network with five stations. So thank you, board of directors. Some of you are still on the board, and some of you are new, but thank you to the board of directors for allowing us the opportunity to bring the archives to a reading audience. And what we have on the screen here is basically some of the events that are coming up for the book to be, go to bookstores with City Lights. So we'll be at Essawan Books here in Los Angeles February 2nd. And the author, editor, Joanne Griffith, will be in conversation with a few people. Then we're going to San Francisco at the Museum of African Diaspora February 8th. Marcus Books in Oakland February 9th. We're going to Washington, D.C., Busboys and Poets at WPFW February 16th, and we'll be at WBAI in New York City at Human Books and at the Brecht Forum. And we'll also, again, go into Madison, Wisconsin. I thought I'd take just a moment to read a first paragraph. I authored the foreword to the book. My work is a never-ending history lesson. Every day I learn something new from the thousands of whispers that cry out from the vault of the Pacifica Radio Archives, a unique collection that is virtually unknown to most Americans, including scholars, educators, and social justice advocates. Over the last decade, it has been my personal goal to see this awe-inspiring words, ideas, experiences, and historic moments documented by the Pacifica Radio Network to become more accessible by way of the written page. This book and the Redefining Black Power, Reflections on the State of Black America Project is the beginning of this process. Yay. there is more, but I guess you'll have to read the book. The book is $16.95 and is available on Amazon.com and everywhere. And it's also going to be available to all the Pacifica radio stations that will be focusing as a premium. Well, of course. Why wouldn't I? Yes?
Would you possibly be looking for other venues when you're in New York? Because I can give you some suggestions.
We would love some suggestions. We're sort of booked. We're like in and out. We're there for three days, and two of the days are already booked. So we'll see what we can do.
Brian, do you prefer to take questions interspersed with your presentation?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, if that's your preference, we'll do it that way. Thank you. I believe Fia has a question.
Sure.
More than a question, Brian, as you well know, I have a comment. I took the time to listen to the material on the flash drive because I was remain concerned of your treatment of African people's history from your very presentation of this project. And I raise with you the question of cultural imperialism, the exploitation of our history, and the white male arrogance to presume to define, not to mention redefine, a period in our history that came about for the specific purpose of addressing white domination. Right. Now, to start talking about African self-determination in the modern era with the Black Panther Party and Bobby Seale engaged in a row of self-aggrandizing rhetoric is a clear manifestation of a lack of understanding of the subject matter or of the parties. That you would put together a material of this sort and to presume to call it Black Power is an insult, especially when the people who actually did the initial work, drafted the position papers, which provided the theoretical underpinnings for the modern day call for Black Power, are still alive, available, and accessible for interviews is an outrage. The material that you have presented, you and Joan Griffith, is a total distortion of the history of black people, particularly in this era. And as much as it infuriates me, it also saddens me that the opportunity was available to really do a meaningful project that would present the archives in a scholarly fashion, that would do social justice by presenting the truth, and to make available to current and coming generations a point and frame of reference on which they could build future movements. I am totally outraged by this commercial exploitation of the history and the blood, sweat, and tears of black people that this represents.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I should say I appreciate your comment. It isn't a book about the history of the power movement. It's gives opportunity to other voices, including roundtables at the Pacifica Radio Network, to be collated. So Michelle Alexander, Van Jones, Dr. Vincent Harding, all participated. And my opinion, or the rendering or curation of the archives, is not in the book. The archives audio is merely noted as reference material for the book. So, again, I appreciate your comments and your concern. I hope you read the book so you can understand what we were trying to do.
And we'll review it.
I guess the next part I wanted to move into was a little bit more detail on the larger grants that we're trying to get into. The National Historical Publications and Records Administration, a quick overview. The Pacifica Archives requests funds toward the processing and creating detailed, accurate, widely disseminated item-level descriptions of 1,644 historical radio programs in its newly defined topical collection. American Women Making History and Culture, 1963 to 1982. The budget for this two-year project, July 2012 to June 2014, includes allowances for treating and digitizing 1,363 original master analog reel-to-reel recordings. All programs were produced for and broadcast by Pacifica Radio Network stations. This allows us to not only digitize the recordings, but make the records available and the audio available to California digital libraries, which are trusted digital libraries. In this project, we were able to get notification and endorsements from U.S. Senators Kristen Gillibrand from New York, as well as Congressman Henry Waxman, and educators in gender studies from Barnard College and Harvard University, as well as some 20 others. So I'm very proud that the NHPRC grant was submitted successfully, and we'll know in April if we receive it. In preparing the proposal, we have garnered impressive testimony to the value of this collection. Gary Hanman, director of the Media Resources Center at the Moffitt Library at University of California, Berkeley, notes that, "I know of no other oral history or audio collection in the U.S. dealing with women's history that is as comprehensive or as breathtaking in scope or variety." The recordings in the Pacifica Archives are available who's who of the women and men who actively brought about the feminist movement in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I can think of no other way to make up for the loss of these voices if they are not permanently captured. That's Michelle Cicero, managing editor of Ms. Magazine. And also from Radcliffe Institute, from the vantage point at the Schlesinger Library on the history of women in America, I can see the growing interest in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in the post-World War II women's movement. So again, $173,000, if approved, would be coming from the NHPRC, and the Pacifica Archives and the Foundation would be matching that in both an in-kind cost share to do that. So it's more or less a $350,000 project over a 2.5 to 3 year period that we look forward to.
Are those two women African American?
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, please. Can,
No, I said I'm sorry, Summer.
Oh, no, no. I'm asking the audience, the public, if they could please let Mr. DeShazer simply make his presentation. Thank you.
So I think that's the end of my presentation. I'm open to more questions and comments, and we can listen to some audio if you really want to, but I know we've got some time to make up for you to go to dinner.
Thank you, Brian. You're very considerate. But questions from the board? Bill?
I just want to say thank you, and I know our development director who organizes our fund drives at KPFT in Houston and who's black is very excited to offer these new recordings as premiums, and there's been quite a bit of interest from some of our programmers. We just started a fund drive on Wednesday, which will go into the first part of February, and we use Black History Month, even overlapping with fund drive. We use the fund drives that overlaps in February to particularly, you know, encourage Black History Month programming and make more people aware of it. And I know she's also mentioning that new offering the new CD that has black music and musicians. I forget the title of it that you have available as a premium. So thank you for that, too.
Heather?
I got you. Oh, sorry, I'm going to take some. Brian, I want to thank you as well. And I also want to say that your assistance, actually, in helping our station in Atlanta with the wonderful premiums has just been so appreciated. Our listeners just love hearing these voices. Whether it has to do with black history or environmental issues or other kinds of just amazing work. It's just so appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. So I'm looking forward to more of that this year as well. No, so we need to get you to come to Atlanta also.
Would love to.
Right. Yeah, right. Revelyn, right. You're next.
Yeah.
I got you.
I have some... I don't know kind of question. So, but at first I want to echo what Heather said. It really does warm us to hear voices of people like Stokely Carmichael and just everybody that you don't normally hear. Even a lot of progressive people don't play anymore. So thank you. But I would like to know and understand. The archives are a part of the Pacifica Network, and about what is the value of the archives about now? Do you know?
That's a good. Priceless.
Tingle.
Net worth. Actually, it's never been assessed. It's really very difficult. We've tried many times over many years, and there really is not a really good way to say it other than it's going to cost probably close to $25 million to get it digitized and made accessible the way that we are trying to. With 50,000 plus reel-to-reel tape masters, we've only digitized and formally preserved about 10% of it. And time is a ticking, by the way.
Right, So that would be like doubled or tripled in terms of its value.
Yeah.
And does that value add to what Pacifica is worth? I'm just trying to understand how it all weaves together.
I'd say that, you know, the archives represents the whole network, and as we do more preservation and make them more accessible and get them into universities and scholars and into the consciousness of America, then I think it will give the foundation and the stations even more value. I mean, I think we see it all the time with students listening to the recordings of the historic material and then being introduced to KPFK as a new radio station for them. I mean, also, this is the first time we are on the public radio player from the vault. If you're on your iPhone and have downloaded the free public radio player, we are on the on-demand programming in the alphabetical listing. But it goes automatically up there every week.
So does that mean we have an app? Do we have an app?
There is an iPhone app called the public radio player. Right.
Teresa, you're next.
Should be on iTunes.
I got you.
No.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm not on
this. Teresa.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Teresa.
I thought you said Tracy. I'm sorry.
Sorry, it was the TR thing flowing together too quickly there. Teresa Allen.
It's always
please.
Amazing to me when I listen to politicians and they really say something stupid or they make some statement and then certain individuals on television are like catching them. What they're denying, they catch them in their archives. They find them contradicting themselves. Okay. So I'm concerned not only about what you are doing, about what was on the radio 50 years ago, but like what's happening now? How well are we archiving what we're doing presently with those keywords so it can be accessed?
Right.
So my question is, compared to KPFK, because I know they're, you know, you're on their mind and they're taking the material up those steps to you and say, put this in the archives. How well are the other stations doing in getting what they're doing on the archives?
Right.
And are we, like you just had an FCC meeting in Atlanta. Is that archived anywhere? Would we be interested in if the affiliates sent us something in archiving that? Because they're affiliated with us?
I would recommend the Public Broadcasting Archive at the University of Maryland. That's where a lot of the affiliates and the NFCB collection, tape collection, resides. And actually, we deaccessioned that from the Pacifica Archives back in the 80s when it became too much for us to hold. In terms of the recording and preserving what we're doing now, in the advent of the digital age, somewhere we managed to get a T1 line that recorded KPFK signal 24/7 into the archive, and we've been storing that for, I think, the past 3 or 4 years. We'd like to do that with all the 5 stations, and we've been working with Otis and John, and Ali Alexa have been working with Otis and John about the digital archive and the websites and how our language and their language sort of interact and where they diverge. So we're looking for a way to record all the stations and then have them put on hard drives and then sent to us in the archive. But we're also looking to backtrack digitally what we can get from their servers and do that. So we're on it. It's going to take a little bit more time, though.
Do you think your progress will be notated in your next report?
I hope so. Well, yeah, yes, then. Okay. Miss Madam Chair, I'm board member.
Director to you.
That would be Director Allen you're addressing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Campbell, you're next. I got you.
Why Allen?
That's her last name. I was being formal.
Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any plans afoot to, say, move forward on another publication that would be related to the archives and whatnot?
Right. Yeah. There is interest from both the publisher and from us in the archive. What's going to take is, I think we both parties would like to see how this first book goes and what kind of response it does and what kind of fielding does. But like I said, we've been getting good reviews from Publishers Weekly, which is read by publishers and booksellers everywhere, as well as Kirkus Review, which is read by librarians everywhere. So there's a good feel about that.
Thank you.
Ken, you're next.
Teresa asked the main question I had, but I have a follow-up on that. Since you're getting it digitally, are you able to keynote any of the material or index it? And is it possible, because it's digital, that the programmers could somehow provide keywords that would be automatically integrated into the database? And the third question is, if a station wanted to, could they send you something and say, please add this to the archives?
I'm going to go from 3 to 3 backwards. So, yes, people can send physical CDs or tapes to the archives, and we can take them on that way. The digital thing, if can we get indexing? How the metadata or the indexing is done from the start at the level where the programmers put it into the archive for posting online to the station archives, if I'm getting that straight. That metadata, I think we're finding how that gets translated into our archive, and then the archival metadata then gets sort of rendered. So we're working on those sort of 2 systems and how they will link together eventually. But whatever is in the online archive at the station's level, well, then that metadata information can then be transferred, we're hoping.
Thank you, Ken. Ali is next. I'll put you on second round.
Okay, real quick, before I ask my question, I would like to speak to that. The new archiving system that we've put in place at KPFK, and the same one is now in WBI and KPFT, all of the programmers that take the time to put in the topics, the guests, the web links, and other information, that's stored in a spreadsheet that's now folded in with the archives, and that goes directly to Pacific Radio Archives, and I think it's fantastic because that's putting in the searchable information, especially the name of the guests and the topics, so that in the future it'll be really easy to find that speech that person gave on that date about whatever. Secondly, I missed the beginning of your presentation. Did you talk about the campus campaign at all?
Yeah, I did. We talked about the two-day fund drive and how the $150 in pledges was about the campus campaign and school copies went.
Okay, well, I just wanted to add that I was particularly impressed with the concept and the implementation that you were able to get people to do matching and, what's the word, adopting?
Or sponsoring a school.
Sponsoring schools, because that gets this information in the schools that isn't there. And I would like to suggest the other stations to look at that as a model for possible special fundraising for a 1 or 2 day event. I just want to commend you on that project, and I think it was very effective.
One of the ideas I actually was thinking about, how the network has the five stations, if we could get the stations to do a best of year, like annual, the best programming from each station, call it together, make that the campus campaign so that our voices actually get into the schools directly, sort of pushed by our own listeners, then we can actually sort of keep moving our identity into youth.
Andrea Turner is next. My apologies, Andrea. You were further up in rotation. I'm sorry I missed you.
I find that this is really, I find that, yes.
That mic's
I find that this is really interesting. Okay, thank you.
Nice.
Okay, all right. It's back,
it's
beautiful. Yeah. Oh, I love it. So, let me understand. Where you are is the holding tank. Just finally, bear with me, I'm a little, the holding tank for all of us.
Right.
Okay.
For all of us.
Right. For the five Pacifica radio stations, and we do have some independently produced programs.
And so we can ship in things to you so that you will then archive it all. Okay.
Yeah.
I was concerned about the T1 line. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that a little
it's,
bit more?
It's sort of like the... it's a pipe that brings in the internet.
Uh-huh.
Wait, is that right?
Okay, T1 line, you want me to take this one?
Yeah, it's like a phone line, right?
It's okay. The difference between a T1 line and like a telephone line modem connection, picture the difference between a little straw and a big old fire hose for your data. It's a bigger phone connection. It's digital.
So
we have a much longer conversation on T1s, but that's enough. It allows more data to travel more quickly.
Okay.
Thank you.
I've
done T1
lines. Do we have cable hookup to all of the cable programming?
Not in the archive.
Okay, because that's I'll talk to you later about that, because I think that that's a way to broaden us out into a lot of the residential facilities where throughout cities where they're just really craving for information to pump through those cable lines because they're not going out, and especially senior homes and senior centers, recreational centers, they have cable hookups, and we have a great cable system in Oakland, and as well as in Berkeley. It would be really great if we could figure out how to get some of that free time for programming.
Why not?
Right. My other question is because we were talking about this, was having a Pacific Film Festival, because you have a lot of things in the archives that we could it's something to think about as a fundraiser. I really have enjoyed the fundraising committee trying to figure out how to raise monies, and we were just talking about that. So that's a possibility to do, too. Pacifica Film Festival. Hey, ain't that live? That would be just so hot if we could do something like that and work with you on that. I mean, y'all may be sleep about that, but it would be a good fundraiser.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm still on first round.
Thank you.
George?
Yeah, as an adjunct to this, campus campaign, I'm concerned that things get sent, for instance, I'm at a university, and they get sent to the library and get lost, that nobody there pays any attention to it. I'd like to see just a 3-minute audio clip. You had one with Rosa Parks for instance, speaking, which I could send to my colleagues in the history department, for instance, and in sociology and other places like that, and say, hey, guess what? This is now available somewhere in the library, and I could probably find out where it is in the library and let them know. So I would suggest that you do that.
I'm sorry, to do...
Send along a clip to the person who bought it for the institution. A trailer, yes, that's right.
A promo piece, right?
A promo piece that could be forwarded to people within the institution.
Ah, got it.
So
got
they
it.
Can promote it.
Got
so
it,
that they could promote it, exactly. So
thank you.
At least know it's there. I mean, I don't think anybody knows it's there.
Just so everyone knows, I've been watching the clock the whole time. Thank you. It's right up there. Okay. Carolyn, you go ahead. I'm still on first round. Go ahead. And we may not have time for second round, so.
Thank you. This is what happened. That lovely little booklet that you distributed in the early days of all of your materials. I copied that. I got some copies from you. There weren't enough. I photocopied it, sent it around to everybody in the English and history and sociology departments. And I said, this material is now available in the library. And please let me know if you want more or a copy for your department and so on. Just to make sure, because George pointed out is exactly the problem. You send it to a library and it disappears. Nobody knows it's there. So there has to be promotional material. And if individuals don't do it peer-to-peer, it's very difficult. So you might want to think about some promotional material.
The good news is that after the first year, we actually did get responses from librarians from the 1,000, the first round. So this is the third year we've done the campus campaign. And now that we have archivists and we've had sort of interaction with librarians who wrote us questions, we actually created the librarian language to catalog it appropriately in the library. So we go from archive to library language. So it's already been done. So when the materials go, they actually get a letter and the form and all the digital material to actually, so they just sort of plop, I don't want to say they plop it into their records, but it appears that they understand what they're getting and know how to catalog it appropriately. But I do understand the thing about the promo. If they get something, then they can push it forward to other institutions.
Thank you. Are there any other first round questions? Somebody who hasn't asked anything that would like to ask Brian something? Okay. I'm willing to use this last 5 minutes for second round, but, like, you got 3 minutes, Otis, is this only?
But I think we should entertain Mr. Siegel's recommendation to...
Before we have it.
Yeah, because if we have to be out by 5, then we'll be...
I haven't seen an agitated hotel person just yet, but I think we're still okay, but not for too much longer. Do you guys want your second round real fast? Can you make it? Okay. So I've got Heather Campbell and Afia all had... one quick follow-up. And Revelin, I'm sorry. Heather had her hand up first a long time ago, so I'm going to let Heather go first. Okay, then Campbell. You're going to pass? All right, and you're so eager. Go on. You want that question.
Thank you so much. Brian, I was very quick first time. One quick thing. This we may have to finish up later on. I'm looking at what is the relation between PRA and our affiliates network, and what perhaps engagement might there be with AudioPort? And I don't know if there's an established relationship. I can't recall right offhand. And thirdly, the notion of working PRA through other platforms that may include video. So you can take any piece of that until they run us out.
I'll just say that the affiliates at the NFCB, the National Federation of Community Broadcasters Conference, which is the main meeting place for the affiliates, where Afia and Heather are representative of that group, they're very welcoming of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and they've said in their meetings and circle meetings that many of them applaud the archives and noted it's part of the reason why they affiliate with the network, as well as the programming. We do have a relationship with them. We do offer premiums, although they... I don't know why they don't work in certain markets, but a lot of our premiums don't work in the affiliate markets, and we're always trying to work that. But as Heather said, sometimes it does work, but not in the sense that we could count on it as a secure revenue stream. But I guess the goodwill and making sure that the affiliate listeners understand that there's a connection to a foundation with history is a really positive.
Thank you.
Other platforms?
Oh, other platforms. That's going to be a later time talk.
Okay.
Okay, we're down to 2 minutes. Afia had something.
Atheist programming. That's what
Bella, I ask you, please, out of courtesy and respect, I've got a meeting to run, and we have to be out of this room in a couple minutes. Could I please let the two board members who still had questions ask them? Thank you.
Right, but before we sort of end up, I did want to note on the archives page, this the most recent National Endowment for the Arts grant, it's the first time we've been able to allow all 150 programs in their entirety to be streamed online. And what we're looking at now is the entire free speech, student free speech, the student free speech movement of 1964. So, I don't know, it's something like 50 hours or something, segment by segment, and also it's been transcribed and rendered by the UC Berkeley's Moffitt Library Social Activism Project. So it's also available through there, and they've actually worked their catalogers in transcribing some of these materials. So, Mario Savio. And I also was very privileged to November 16th, when the Occupy movement was sort of at one of its peaks, we were able to not only play Mario Savio's speech during that day, but interview Mrs. Savio. I forget her last name all of a sudden. Lynn Hollander, thank you, who came live on the Pacific Archives Fund Drive Day during the very moment and talked about Mario's legacy.
So now that's final quick questions thank or you. Comments.
My question is what are the copyright implications for the materials in the archives, the materials that's currently being submitted and the materials that you are holding from previous years?
Right. Copyright, as any attorney will tell you, is a very gray, difficult subject matter. And what we're always trying to learn, not only for ourselves, but for all of public broadcasting and public radio, is what those how well we can understand those definers. So in this current National Endowment for the Arts partially funded grant, we went to John Krigler, who's an attorney, both has been for the Pacifica Network and for public media in general, one of the Bayer Award winners at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. He gave us a pro bono intern for the summer who did research on copyright for public broadcasting, and that was turned into a report to us just recently, and it's being rendered by Arlene Engelhart, the executive director, and we'll be going back and forth to figure out what part of it is publishable for the public and what part of it is internal for Pacifica to use as a tool to understand copyright better.
Thank you. Revelyn?
Okay. My question really sort of speaks to that. A little bit has to do with the music that you all archive. Remember we were talking about Billy Higgins, that festival. So the artists that participated, did you record their playing in that context, and what happens to their music?
When live events happen like that, and particularly if it's a station-sponsored event, we give them speaker release forms that give us, the station, and the foundation permission to utilize and distribute that recording in various different ways. Every artist is different, and every situation is different. So even Dr. Bernice Reagan-Johnson was with us on the Archives Fund Drive Day, talked about that very thing, and even with her working with a speaker release and how to understand what the wishes of the artists are important. So we do have a speaker release at Pacifica that is used often, not enough in my opinion, and the records in the archives are almost nil, which is why we went to an attorney to get a better understanding of copyright when we don't know what the original agreement was.
Thank you so much. Brian, do you have any final closing words you want for us?
No, just thank you for having me, and
thank you for
have
being
a good
with
dinner.
Us.
Thank you
so much. Thank you again to Brian DeShazer, Director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, for all the work that you do on behalf of the foundation. Thank you.
Atheist programming, that's what we need.
You know, I want some Catholic and Orthodox programming too, you know, because I'm feeling underserved. Hold on, folks. Hey, if you're on the board, don't get up yet. We had a suggestion for modification of schedule from Dan. Let me tell you what's going on, and then we can. Okay, we have a reservation tonight. This is not pre-booked like tomorrow night is when I expect you to show up for dinner. There are shuttle issues here. Like I had to block out an hour's worth of shuttle time so we could have two shuttles run people back and forth. So there are logistical considerations to shifting the time. I'm not opposed to shifting the time. If you all want to meet for the next 2 hours, but I got to call the restaurant, I got to push down the reservation, I'm not sure we'll have a shuttle, we might be schlepping in cars. I mean, Dan?
So, I mean, I really appreciate your efforts and the logistics and everything else. It seems to me, though, that I'm probably not the only one who's feeling kind of tired after 8 hours of meeting. And if we're going to need to meet for 2 more hours, right, which I think that's the plan, and we're all committed to doing that, we do it now. We're done at 7 o'clock, which is still a reasonable time to have dinner.
Sure.
We're probably a lot fresher now than we will be at 8 o'clock, you know, especially if people go to dinner and and have a glass of wine or...
Did that hit you, Ollie?
Uh-oh.
What was it? It's the
big,
heavy...
Oh, geez.
It's better than a computer.
Is there a doctor in the house?
What happened?
She fell. And I'm also thinking that maybe you'll save money because some of us at 7 o'clock may choose to go on our merry way and take the rest of the night off, and you'll have fewer people to take to dinner.
I hear that. I would ask for the consideration of people at least letting me know if they're going to go on their merry way, if that's what's happening. So, but
Summer, yeah, like I didn't know that you had made reservations somewhere. I mean, I didn't know about the change in schedule until later. I won't be there right now if you're going to have dinner.
I made arrangements for dinner for every night because people are here from other states, and I presume they needed to eat.
Yeah, so we can say whether we're going to be here or not. So
one at a time, please.
Tracy? Microphone, I can't hear you.
Just speaking for myself, my stomach is pounding as it is, and if you make me sit here for 2 more hours without eating, I'm going to get sick.
Okay. So I think we have some people need a break, and other people would prefer not to have it so long. I could have booked dinner here in the hotel, but it's more expensive to eat in the hotel, and I thought we had lots of hotel food going on anyway. At this point, we've already got a motion to come back at 8 o'clock. It would take, like, voting to change it. I'm happy for consensus, but if it can't be reached, then it...
Can we do takeout at the place and then have our...
It's a real restaurant. It's, like, sitting down.
Sorry?
Real restaurants have takeout.
Yeah.
All right. Then I'm going to go start wrangling logistics downstairs to make sure we've got a shuttle.
And the other issue is we have to be out of this room, right? Yeah, so we can't continue.
No, we cannot continue. What do you want to do? Well, no, we've already voted on that. That was already done. I mean, we voted early to go eat.
I just want to get it
and
over
come back at 8 o'clock.
And that was really my feeling. It's like